And Ray Long joins us from the Chicago Tribune, the investigative reporter, the author of The House That Madigan Built, The Record Run of Illinois' Velvet Hammer. Jury selection, is that what starts tomorrow, Ray?
Well, right, John. You know, it's thank you very much. It's always a good time to be here on your show. I appreciate that. You're right.
You bet.
Jury selection starts tomorrow. But what they'll do tomorrow, really, is they'll just run some questionnaires for the jury to fill out. The real process of questioning and answering potential jurors begins on Wednesday. And then they will probably take the rest of the week to do that, to get a full jury and some alternates. Then we have the Columbus Day weekend, and then on Tuesday they will have opening statements. That would be Tuesday a week from now. And so this is going to be the big trial here, one of the biggest we've seen for alleged political corruption in decades, if not a century or more.
Yeah. I mean, you'd put this right up there with the Blagojevich trials?
Yeah, there's an interesting thing here with guys like Blagojevich and Ryan and even Ed Burke. Those guys were always kind of fast and loose in a different kind of way than Madigan, who is always very close to the vest. So even though it's big to see governors go down, obviously, and big to see Ed Burke go down, this guy Madigan was somebody who a lot of people thought was always too smart to be caught, and or too smart to even do anything that would cross the line. Now prosecutors are saying that he did cross the line, and he's going to have quite a defense. He's got a great set of attorneys. He's taken $8 million from his campaign fund to fund his defense effort. So, like I said, this is going to be a fight that we'll not see anything the likes of for years.
If he's not guilty of a crime, then I hope he doesn't get to jail. I will root for justice, even if I don't think I like Mike Madigan. But when I get to be king, you cannot use your campaign funds, $8 million, to defend yourself against crimes that you are alleged to have committed while in office. I mean, that seems to me like an insurance policy almost. You can, without any expense to you, have some assurance you'll get the best protection from the crimes you're being charged with. That I don't think that's why people donate to candidates.
Yeah, it's very puzzling. A lot of people will say that's not right, just like you articulated. But the argument, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but the argument that is used is, well, they participated in government, and therefore they used their campaign fund to get into government, and they should be able to defend themselves. But you're right. The average citizen on the street doesn't have a campaign fund to dip into if he gets charged with a crime.
Of course, people were giving to him all these years knowing that there was something, if nothing else, mysterious about him. The, what is it, longest-serving, what's his chronology?
Yeah,
what
he's the longest-serving speaker, the longest-serving legislative leader of anyone in American history, in all states, in the U.S. government. So he has a record like no one else, and it is a record of you know, definite power. He was the ultimate power broker in Springfield.
What's the crime here, or crimes? It's 23 counts, but just tell me a little bit about what the feds are alleging.
Yeah, in short, they allege that he ran his office and political operations like a criminal enterprise. But what we have here are things that are called racketeering and bribery-related counts, and these are allegations that basically break down to him getting people who are allies put on contracts with ComEd and even AT&T to do little or no work. And the allegation is that this was done by the companies to influence him to do things that would help them with their legislative agendas.
Right. So if you wanted a rate hike, you had to play this game.
Yeah, well, there's also this one that dips into the local area here where there was a land parcel in Chinatown that was owned by the state, and there were conversations with Madigan and Danny Solis, who was the zoning chairman, the alderman who was the zoning chairman, and there's the mole in this a case who wore a wire on Madigan. And as you remember, John, he's the one who wore the wire on Ed Burke, too.
Yeah.
And so the allegation is that Madigan helped or was agreeing to help move this state parcel into the city so that Danny Solis could then, as zoning chairman, zone it in a way that would help a developer, and the developer in turn would send property tax appeal work to Madigan. That's another line of inquiry that is going to get a lot of attention here, and it probably has been underplayed along the way, but it's one that people will be watching too.
And it's a little convoluted, but after having said all of that, he didn't really enrich himself that much, did he? He doesn't have gold bars and cash stuffed in pockets and closets, does he?
This is not like Menendez in New Jersey, but the power of the speakership was one that allowed him to be a rainmaker for his law firm. And so you could view it like that, that it enriched him and it enriched his power. And instead of money in a cash in a bag, if you will, the prosecutors are going to allege that what is similar is that these companies were giving jobs to his friends and not requiring them to do anything to get it. So his people who were political allies and precinct captains were ones who would get these contracts, and that was one way he could reward his friends and thus reward his political operation. It's convoluted and nuanced, there's no doubt about it, but that's the angle that they seem to be pushing, that the prosecutors seem to be pushing.
To think this goes back to pre-2016, and now finally we're here. and in 30 seconds or less, how is the defense going to position Mike Madigan? Are they going to say you don't have him saying much? Is that it?
Well, right. That's one thing. They don't have him saying much, and they are going to push the idea that you can't really prove that he intended to do these deals as a quid pro quo, or as getting these guys on contract in exchange for passing legislation. You can't prove that intent because they say he didn't have that intent and he did not have any legality in his mind.
Right. Well, he was famously non-digital. He didn't spend much time on the computer. He didn't own a cell phone. At least that's what they say his people did. And so he was able to maybe avoid any footprints. But we'll see how this case plays out. I appreciate the timeline. So jury selection, then a delay, then opening arguments next week. I know you'll be following it, Jason, and we will continue to ask you to comment on it. I'm sorry. I'm looking at Jason's name, Ray. Let's connect with
Jason's
it's good company.
Good man. He's going to be there all the
time,
too.
It's good company.
All right.
We'll be in touch, Ray. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Bye-bye.
Ray Long, the Chicago Tribune investigative reporter, he wrote, "The House That Madigan Built."